Alrighty then. Good morning.
Robbie Suave, how are we?
How are you doing?
Well, you're about to tell me, I'm sure.
What I'm going to tell you is that you are still at large, fleeing law enforcement, eluding capture all over the world.
You would be surprised at the number of disguises and costumes I had to use to get to the studio today.
Oh, yeah? Did you have a fake mustache, fake beard?
I don't want to say... Hey. Okay. I don't want to say too much because then that would obviously reveal my subterfuge. But yeah. There was, cars passing each other in the night, dodging agents on trains and... You know, the whole
Tintin stuff.
Yeah. I didn't bring a dog with me, but
I loved Tintin as a kid.
You know, we weren't really a Francophile household. So.
Well, you're trying to elude capture, but mm-hmm. ICE is out to get you. Yep. And they're out in full force in the state of Minnesota, mm-hmm. Where you have perpetrated all of your crimes.
Alleged.
And it's real. It's ICE, maybe.
Okay, very good, very good. Well, hopefully I will be a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
They only need a hit one time.
it's getting bad out there. A lot of videos of clashes between, armed, masked, faceless federal authorities and the Karen Antifa, I think that's what it is now.
Very good.
This
Anita-fa.
Yeah, army of older... white women objecting to what's going on. And
the wine moms have become radicalized.
They become radicalized.
Yeah.
We must arm the moderate wine moms. They'll greet us as liberators. Yeah.
Right. Well, what's a moderate wine mom? Like two glasses a day or...
There's no such thing.
That's right.
Really
yeah.
What the, mm-hmm. They can't help themselves. But
yeah, the wheels are really coming off the bus here.
You think
it seems
so?
It seems like the administration is kind of losing control of their own operation.
Do you feel in charge?
All right, we got to reset the counter of a Robbie Bain. Yeah, weeks without a Robbie Bain impression.
I can't help
back
myself.
To zero.
I can't help myself.
In fact, we literally just have a zero in the ticker. So.
Yeah.
So keep it up. Absolutely. So last week we talked about this very tragic shooting.
Yes.
Renee Good killed by a ICE agent.
Yeah. Even just saying it's a tragedy she died is controversial.
Right. She's a domestic terrorist that deserved to be gunned down.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of the range of views from that to...
Right. The moderate position is that it was at a minimum a tragedy.
Yeah.
So I'm
comfortable saying it was very much a tragedy that we wish could have been avoided and perhaps should have been avoided.
We discussed last week, I think it was very much avoidable.
Yeah.
I put the great stock of the blame. Well, I think she's made some poor decisions in the moment. I put the great stock of blame on the federal agents involved here.
I put some blame on her partner, her wife.
Encouraging her to,
drive off.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Stop. I mean, I hope they are not actually normalizing the idea among these, recently radicalized wine mom type people that you could do. Like, they think that ICE is illegitimate and what they're doing is illegitimate and thus you don't have to follow their instructions, which is not how interactions with law enforcement work. You have to follow their instructions even if you don't. Think they have moral validity.
Yes, you should look out for yourself and
take
care to see that you're not hurt.
Yes.
Actually, if I can make an inflammatory comparison, that maybe you were a big campus free speech and the gender politics guy back in the day, right?
Anti-Me Too.
Yes. Yeah,
due process.
Right. Yeah.
We just care about due process.
That's right. We just care about due process.
Yeah.
So you'll recall...
If the process is due, you must pursue.
All right, we'll work on that one. So you'll recall a common kind of argument that would happen when it came to like campus sexual assault, which would be people, someone would get themselves in a situation where they were drunk and then they claimed that they were assaulted or something like that. And
they would claim that.
And, a piece of advice that people would offer would be like, well, don't get yourselves in these situations. Don't get drunk when you're around people you don't know, when you don't have a way home, you're around strange people, whatever else. And then the response, oftentimes the feminist response would be like, well, it's not my responsibility not to be raped,
right?
Which is true, but at the same time, it's like you can also take care of yourself to protect yourself from that happening, even if it's not your fault that you were victimized.
Absolutely.
Which, of course, it's not your fault that you were victimized, right?
Yes.
I feel a similar thing watching kind of the groundswell against ICE in Minneapolis, where it's like, it's not your fault if an ICE agent abuses you or shoots you, whatever else, right?
You are the victim.
You are the victim.
We shouldn't get around the fact that if you've been shot in the head and killed by...
You are
police,
the victim.
You are the victim.
You are the victim.
By definition.
Yes. That being said, you should be very cognizant of the fact that if you are inserting yourself into a volatile situation, things can go poorly. Maybe another more direct example would be Kyle Rittenhouse from back in the day, right? I think we'd both agree he was justified in defending himself.
Right. When you look closely at each and every interaction that he did have where he chose to fire,
he was attacked.
It is justified each single one as you go through it.
Yeah.
Yes. But
he also inserted himself into a very volatile situation while he's armed and things got out of control.
Which is not a crime. Oh, no, he crossed daylight. Not a crime, but
not a crime.
I can also say...
It would have been wise not to do
choice.
That. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, a little bit of care and wisdom here. Obviously, it's completely fine to protest and to make your voice heard.
And to film. Mm-hmm. Everybody's happy. Yep. Everyone on both sides, this is the only thing people agree on, is that we're all glad there's filming of it.
Yeah.
Although it hasn't – it's interesting that it hasn't produced greater – clarity or a greater consensus about what the recorded events depict.
Quite the opposite. it just has produced more angles from which people can argue
in like
about.
A postmodernist sense, like video is a liar.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And it creates more lies for which for us to argue about. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, part of this, I guess, is maybe a bit of selection bias where it's like, if the video is so clear cut, then it doesn't become a national controversy and people don't argue about it. But at the same time, if it's like there's any sort of this is a very controversial and very polarizing issue. And so therefore, if there's any sort of question whatsoever revealed by the video, then all it does is bring in a million John Maddens, you know, doing the, did his knee
That's
touch the ground
guy,
here?
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
You watch some sports, right?
I know. I watch some football.
Yeah.
I used to play the Madden football video games.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I used to be a big football fan back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I only
then...
care about Michigan football. Mm. My Wolverines are going through a little bit of a tough time with the actually, this is the only time I've ever been glued to my seat watching news coverage of a sports story was the coach. Did you hear about the Michigan
mm-hmm.
coach?
What happened?
Oh, it's bad. He has been fired. Mm-hmm. He had an affair with a staffer. Mm-hmm. Whatever, no one cares. But he also then threatened to kill her, I think, and himself.
That's not so good.
For exposing the... it's an employee, so it's a... It's going to be an issue. So, yeah, he got fired.
Yeah,
but he drove to her place. I don't recall the exact... I think he went to her place and was like, I'm going to fucking kill you, bitch.
Oh, my goodness.
Not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's crashing out bad.
That's not
they
so
had to
good.
Fire the athletic director too. It's a bad one. But also it's a decision that like costs him $20 million or something or whatever the salary. It's the highest paid employee in every state
is the
football coach
yep.
of mm-hmm. the university. And if they and you can being a football coach and getting fired is a great deal because you still get paid and you can go be a coach somewhere else collect an additional salary, but not if you get fired for cause. If you get terminated, you violate the contract. So that is a
threatening murder.
Millions of dollars gone.
Damn.
Not good. But all right, I don't think we're totally done with the ICE topic yet. Look, I like libertarians, like so many Americans, I too am very greatly alarmed by what I'm seeing. Rand Paul and Joe Rogan were talking about it. There's other aspects of that interview we want to discuss. And Joe Rogan is a swing voter type person saying, look, I don't like, these masked people. You could think you're being kidnapped if you don't know, if law enforcement is not properly identifying themselves. Is this what we voted for? Him speaking for people who came around to Trump, is this actually what we voted for? Rand Paul saying some typically reasonable things about, there's a difference between doing like undercover law enforcement work, in the border region mm-hmm. or something where I could absolutely understand the case for anonymity and a kind of, you know, this sort of policing in suburban streets in America where it doesn't seem.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the 2016 CNN news segment that they did where the reporter was embedded with ICE going around Chicago, arresting people. Chicago at the time, or Illinois, was a sanctuary state. And CNN was going around following ICE operations, and this went big on kind of right-wing Twitter, which I guess is – or X, which is all of X now, for the fact that CNN's tone was not that these are illegitimate mass goons perpetuating fascism on the country. But the pushback to that is like, okay, but their tactics are also very different in this video. For instance, they – you know, they're clearly identified. They're not wearing masks. And also they're behaving more like police, you know, they pull someone over. It looks more like a traditional traffic stop. It's someone that they have been looking for specifically. There's one point in the video where they catch a guy, and he doesn't have any warrants. He hasn't been arrested for anything and say, okay, he's not a priority. We're going to let him go. That is not what we're seeing now. It's not what we're seeing now. And it's crazy too. The after the shooting, the ramping up of tensions in Minneapolis is causing the administration to just consider increasingly draconian interventions everywhere, right? So on the ground there, there's already talk. Trump has said, maybe I'll evoke the Insurrection Act and send the Marines in, right? They also had this, you know, they stopped all visa processing for 75 countries, right? Which affects some of our colleagues here who, you know, are from other countries or, you know, married to people from countries that are affected. ICE shot another guy. So it's just like the situation is just spiraling out of control. And this is what happens when you try to enforce contentious laws on a restive population. So we can expect more of this. And I don't expect – just the tone from the administration, too, is just really out of control.
Caroline Leavitt went off on our dear friend Niall Stanage, who does Rising with me sometimes and does free media here at Reason with me and Amber. And, there's video footage of that. Maybe we can insert it in even or something. I don't know. If you're not watching it, we didn't do it.
Thanks, Caroline. Earlier, you were just defending ICE agents generally. And earlier on, Secretary Noem spoke to the media, and she said, among other things, that they are doing everything correctly. 32 people died in ICE custody last year. 170 U.S. citizens were detained by ICE, and Rene Good was shot in the head and killed by an ICE agent. How does that equate to them doing everything correctly?
Why was Rene Good unfortunately and tragically killed?
Are you asking me my opinion? Because an ICE agent acted recklessly and killed it unjustifiably.
Oh, okay. So you're a biased reporter with a left-wing opinion.
What do you want me to do?
Yeah, because you're a left-wing hack. You're not a reporter. You're posing in this room as a journalist. And it's so clear by the premise of your question. And you and the people in the media who have such biases but fake, like you're a journalist, you shouldn't even be sitting in that seat.
He's in the White House press pool. He's a White House reporter. He asks... You know, agenda-driven to the extent that he thinks the shooting is very wrong. We've discussed it on free media. And he asked Caroline Leavitt, you know, how can you're saying ICE is doing everything perfectly right. You know, how can you say that given that a woman died? And Caroline Leavitt says, well, why do you think that she died? And Niall says, because an ICE agent, in my view, took a reckless action. And she goes, oh, gotcha, gotcha. So you're a leftist. So you're a biased leftist. Yeah. So you don't even belong here. And then she went off on him for 5 minutes. And then that got clipped. And, you know, Benny Johnson shared, like, oh, based. White House owns reporter. You know, every Soviet, you know, every one of those right-wing people.
Everyone who has called the New York Times the Pravda of America is now and it's sucking the boot of the administration.
Right, I mean, you asked Niall's opinion about it. He thinks it's bad.
Right.
So, like, obviously, we've so eroded anyway the opinion news distinction. Like, they're staffing the White House press briefing room with conservative people who are obviously have opinions that align with the administration.
Yeah.
So it's not. So don't try to tell me you have a problem with a reporter having an opinion. It seemed very, very extra.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, you can say the reporters are acting like op-ed writers, but then everyone who has any sort of public-facing role in this administration is just they talk publicly like a, you know, blue check shit poster, yeah. Right? It's, I don't know if you saw the tweet from the head of the State Department's PR office. And, like, the State Department's PR office, people don't know, is, like, supposed to be, like, the smiley, happy face for America, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in foreign countries, this is the office that hosts, like, the exhibition of, like, Coca-Cola and F-150 trucks, right? And she's arguing with, like, Groypers about how it's not the Jews, it's Angela Merkel that let in these rapist barbarian hordes into Germany. And it's like, why are you inserting your... Why are you having this argument with a 1,700 follower Nazi account on Twitter?
A German Nazi account that's actually Nigerian.
Yeah,
if you look at the tracking.
Right.
Every single time you get some, you know, weird comment from a... pro-Western, you know...
Which way,
right
Western
wing,
man.
Yeah, you look. Nigerian, Pakistani, yep. Etc.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
I've learned a lot in the last week
were,
about the...
You were on a panel on? About...
Yeah,
yeah,
Ryan Grimm wrote me into a little a press event for Pakistani pro-human rights groups in that country in support of Imran Khan, the president there, who was put in, basically ousted in a military coup.
Mm-hmm.
He won the election, and the military just fabricated results that he didn't, put him in prison. And he's a figure of the way. He's in Britain for a long. He was a British cricket player, so he's like
got himself into a little sticky wicket.
Is that what
cricket,
we do
it's
in
a cricket?
Cricket
joke, yeah.
What's the cricket? What is in cricket?
It's cricket bat.
And then bat?
Yeah, and you're trying to, the bowler is trying to knock over wickets behind the batter, yeah.
I didn't understand a single word you just said. I'm picturing...
I don't really understand the rules either.
Badminton is maybe what I'm picturing?
That's the racket with the shuttlecock and...
No, with the what?
Oh, made me drop my pen.
Oh, boy. All right. Control yourself. It's
okay.
Hot in here, but you shouldn't be sweating that much.
Okay. Anyway, it's a bad situation for them in Pakistan that they want the administration. There were a couple figures who spoke up, Matt Gaetz and Rick Grenell, Trump figures who, you know, tweeted and spoke in defense of Imran Khan. Otherwise, the administration has not taken, like, a firm... doesn't really care about the politics of the country,
sure.
But the current regime, you know, is not anti-America, so we're not getting involved. So these people would almost like – they want Trump to speak up about it. They think that will make it less likely that the military
actually
kills this guy,
sure.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
And they have – you know, they're like, how do we draw more attention to this? Why doesn't this get more coverage? And it's almost like it doesn't get more coverage because there isn't a clear – pro-America and anti-America side, and there's nothing for right and left to, you know, grab onto and fight about. So it's not a social media story. It's not generating a lot of mainstream coverage.
Our politics hasn't polarized around either side in this conflict. Yeah.
Right, because that's the lens through which everything must filter. It's even more basic and stupider than that there's no intense pro- or anti-Trump element to it. So there's no way to – that is the great – lens through which our story is reflected,
right?
Which is just awful,
right? Yeah, I mean that's kind of like every like the foreign policy stuff we argue about is if it's polarized domestically, Trump is on one side,
right?
Or maybe there's a very like American foreign policy is very clearly on one side, and then there's the revisionists or the critics who say we should be on the other side or we shouldn't be involved, right? But here it's like, we're not super involved either way, and there's no clear Republican Democratic side,
right.
And so people just don't care.
Right.
Although, you know, people love to argue about you know, our support for Ukraine or Israel or whoever else, and how we're not getting anything from this.
Yes.
Like, if one country in the world has taken America for a ride for no benefit to us, it is Pakistan.
Oh yeah,
by far.
Say
by
more.
Far. Okay, so like back to the 70s and 80s when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, like our policy was basically, you know, use the CIA to give money to Pakistan, who will then arm, you know, the Afghan patriots, Mujahideen, whatever, And the Pakistani intelligence services were like, okay, we're just going to shift all the money to the most radical Islamists involved in this coalition, right? So, like, that didn't work out if you, you know the next couple decades of history. And then, yeah,
a little thing happened. Maybe you've heard of it.
9/11. I shouldn't laugh. It's a terrible tragedy. Yes. But whatever happened there.
yeah, you know, with planes, dynamite, who knows?
Super thermites.
Right. Some people, you know, say organized by our government. You know, who knows?
Building 6, building
could,
7.
Could
who
be
knows?
Anything.
Yeah, it could be anything. You know? No one's ever going to know. But yeah, I mean, this is where a lot of it comes from. And then, you know, you look at where we got finally Osama bin Laden. He's like basically like staying a few blocks down from their version of the Pentagon, right? Yeah. He's in Pakistan, Alexandria,
pool,
Virginia.
He's in a pool, sipping a pina colada, mm-hmm. You know?
I mean, a virgin pina colada, virgin I would assume. Colada, yeah.
Many virgins were probably around or awaiting him or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we can only assume. Yeah. Yeah, so we could use a little more. I mean, it's a wild country with no that's never going to be fixed. So, yeah. But that was
fledgling
that was,
democracy.
Yeah, sure.
Young,
right?
Emerging.
Yeah, fledgling means not working.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of definitions, we got wrong. We discussed juggernaut a few weeks ago.
Oh,
yes. Someone
educate me, Daddy.
Yes, someone. Well, someone in the comments educated me. It has nothing to do, as I suggested, with a ship of any kind.
I didn't think it did.
No, it is a loan word from Hindi. Juggernaut refers to Hindu god who went around on a chariot, I think maybe juggernaut even refers to the chariot itself, and the god was a force of destruction. And so then we import this into English as like an unstoppable destructive force, and that's where
I see.
The X-Men comic and everything
I
else
see,
comes from.
I see, yeah. I see. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense of my introduction to the phrase, as I said, was there's a juggernaut type of unit in the Dynasty Warriors games that I love that are explosive units.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, I mean, I hate to give this admission, but I think maybe you are a little more correct than me suggesting it was some type of Greek ship.
You were thinking of the ship of Theseus, the Nautilus. You were going with nautical.
Yeah, that's what I assumed. I thought
was throwing you off.
Yes, because like dreadnoughts were like
yeah,
a big
ships.
Battleship.
Yeah,
I assumed that was just like a amping up the juggernaut, but I was completely wrong.
Young people
sometimes
are...
we get things wrong on this show, and sometimes we'll admit it, sometimes we won't.
Well, I'll never admit I was wrong about anything, but mm-hmm. you can admit it. And
do you credit your success in the world of media to
never?
Admitting
I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Am I? I'm a little successful now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, given the staggering reach of this podcast now.
Oh, we had our best episode ever last week, and the sky's the limit. Global media empire, and it's starting to go to our heads
a little bit.
You've become very arrogant, very dismissive of others at the workplace. You started really pushing people around.
I have, yeah, not physically, but soon, you know.
Started, harassing people.
When I see a yellow M&M in my bowl of green M&Ms, when I see a wire hanger in our coat closet, I just lose it. You know?
Were talking, Andrew Heaton and I, about sexy M&Ms on free media was getting a little silly.
Okay.
He was also weirdly prepared. He knew a lot about Iran specifically. That kind of threw me off because usually he doesn't try too hard. But we were recalling the Tucker Carlson green M&Ms. Because I was misremembering. I'm like, this was a conservatives complaining about the M&Ms having sexual... But
it was that they weren't sexy enough anymore, right?
They weren't sexy enough. They had de-sexualized the green M&Ms. Like Lola Bunny from Space Jam.
Boop. Yeah.
Now we're really done. This is all over.
It is funny to watch the conservative complaint. I mean, I can understand it to some degree.
Too much sex, like, not enough sex.
Yeah, the teens are having too much sex.
Now they're not having any.
Now they're not having enough.
Yeah.
If they were having just the right amount, they'd be doing it the wrong way.
Yeah, they don't drink enough. They drink too much. There's They can't win.
Yeah, I guess you know you were hoping for in the age of licentiousness in the 1990s.
That they procreate and
live a moral, upstanding life. But instead, we've gotten rid of some of the direct bad behaviors, but it's produced now this sterile, impotent Gen Z who just looks at screens and
social
takes Adderall,
anxiety and
depression and
or so they say.
So they say. Yeah.
I don't really think they. I don't.
You're
believe...
nervous? Yeah, this is it's a ludicrous medicalization.
Yeah, okay,
of just,
you're
like,
not
the
dying in war, so
life,
congratulations.
Right, yeah.
Self-reported mental health, mental health seems to be getting so much worse because people self-report higher rates of anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, and the problem is that reflecting something that's gone very wrong in our society, some brokenness, some new thing like smartphone addiction, or does it just reflect everyone becoming a bunch of pussies?
I mean, I think we have the same level of...
By which I mean people now would not never have admitted before that they were depressed and anxious, but now not only are willing to, like we've destigmatized it, so people are willing to admit that.
There's a bit of social honor to claim this kind of stuff as well. Yeah.
There is a power.
Yeah.
There's a power in your own victimhood, particularly for people who could not claim any kind of actual victimhood if we're going back to like cancel culture and having power as an activist, being the person who is listened to is the person who has the most trauma and oppression. But what if you're white? What if you're affluent? How can you purport to have any kind of compared to poor people or trans people or black people? Well, you're psychologically unwell. You're mentally disabled. That kind of thing. So I think people self-reported it very dramatically, and that explains. And funny enough, Jonathan Haidt, who has become the voice of the most prominent person of the idea that this rise in depression and anxiety is because of the introduction of smartphones.
Yeah.
His theory prior to that was exactly what I just said, was that there is a power to victimhood, and when we ascribe social power to that, you will basically subsidize it. You are encouraging more people to be like that. Well, that explains the entire phenomenon you're now pinging on smartphones.
Right, sure. It's not really technological. It's just social. Yeah, and it's, I mean, I guess a lot of this, too, is just, like, the language we use to describe things. Like, being sad or nervous is just part of the human condition. Mm-hmm. I'm deep in the middle of a war and peace right now, and let me tell you, there's some people who are depressed and anxious, but they just don't describe
themselves.
They're
getting blown up by cannon fire.
Yeah, right.
By those juggernaut units.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. The juggernaut is Napoleon.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't describe your mental state in this way. You wouldn't medicalize it the way we have. You know, it's similar to like autism diagnosis.
Yeah.
Often self-diagnosis has gone through the roof, and that's just because this term has now become an all-encompassing thing, right?
Yeah.
That and the Tylenol or the vaccines.
Yeah,
but,
well,
yeah.
Of course, obviously that. Yeah. It's reminiscent of what's his face, George Carlin, that great routine he had on how.
Don't say the seven words. We can't say those.
Oh, we will not say the seven words. But how language, soft language, or language gets more unable to confront the reality of what it is, like shell shock, becomes combat exhaustion or combat fatigue. It gets more and more abstract, and because we want to make people feel comfortable about the concept rather than, in his view, address the actual causes of the suffering.
Sure, right. Yeah. Although shell shock was a reference to
or post-traumatic stress disorder, like it just keeps getting longer and longer.
Yeah, well, I guess shell shock was kind of like two things, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like one was, an early reference to PTSD. Right, but then like there was a description of a physical condition allegedly people had, whereas like the vibrations of the shells falling around you has messed up your brain.
Was that your experience in Nam?
The salmon plant.
Oh, for you it's the salmon plant.
Right.
I just have to get my hands clean.
Scale shock, that's what we called it. That's a tale for another time.
Oh, all right. Okay. Speaking of combat and war, number two item on my list today, let's fucking do it. Let's finally do it, Star Wars and the prequels.
Okay.
We've discussed other things we like on our podcast, Dune,
Lord of the Rings. This is probably one of your more controversial
opinions.
Star
Wars, yes. Yeah. It is time. And people who've watched me and followed me for years know that I am one of the most high-profile defenders of the Star Wars prequels, which I adore. That doesn't mean I think they have no flaws or I'm like going to make up
for all that. Would just be madness, yeah.
I love their flaws. Their diseases love to me, like the doctor in Dune. It's so and I love, we quote all the time the Mr. Plinkett reviews, which mm-hmm. are great. Most people,
the Red Letter Media channel.
Most people only know about the one for episode one. The episode two and episode three ones are just as good. They're fantastic.
Star Wars episode one is the most disappointing thing since my son.
and he goes through them so expertly and how they, particularly the, well, he complains about a lot of the kind of movie-making problems of mm-hmm. the pacing and tone and
excessive use of CGI.
Mm-hmm. that has not aged well. When the green screen, they're not responding to what they're supposed to be interacting. General Grievous, throws off his coat and mm-hmm. it takes Obi-Wan an unreasonable amount of time to react to it because he's just in front of a green screen. Even though I think Grievous's design is so cool, though. Mm-hmm. I love Grievous. I love these are unique concepts. This coughing cyborg lizard thing that has these hateful yellow eyes mm-hmm. And these like insectoid, the way he detaches his arms and he scuttles about like an insect.
It's disgusting, yeah.
It's cool. It's just awesome. It will be done, Lord Sidious. and then who's also just exists to do whatever. Does he know it's Palpatine? Does Dooku knows it's Palpatine, I think. The Trade Federation be? They don't know because they could have ratted him out at the end of the first movie.
Well, that's one of the criticisms of the plot here is it doesn't really make sense that your cast of bad guys would go along with some like mystery conspiracy orchestrated by this phantom menace that you don't really understand at all, and like you're just watching your entire empire crumble for some cause you can't really understand. Like, what is the hold that this guy has over you, right?
Yeah. Well, the hold over, you're right, it doesn't make sense at first. As it develops, the hold becomes that the bad guys have promised to kill Padme and that the Trade Federation people are just, I fucking hate that bitch. they could have killed her in any other number of ways other than this convoluted assassination that then never actually takes place.
We're still going along for the ride with these jokers.
And that being, and actually he doesn't even scrutinize that as much, but having watched them as many times as I have, and I love them to death. Okay, the second movie, Attack of the Clones, is where it really there's a plot hole that just cannot be explained away or dealt with at all. I'm going to lay it out for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so somebody's trying to kill Natalie Portman, Padme. Mm-hmm. We love her. How dare they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't you dare. Yeah. If you tear her clothing just a little bit, mm-hmm. so the midriff showing, that's fine. But no murder, right?
I should say no more. But
This assassin. And it's an assassin hires an assassin who sends a robot who sends bugs, but whatever. The actual assassin has the jetpack. We know it to be a Boba Fett type person in a mm-hmm. Boba Fett type suit. Mm-hmm. Obi-Wan is investigating this, goes to the planet of where the cloning has taken place, and discovers that this is the assassin, mm-hmm. Jango Fett, is also the model on which all these clone armies are based.
Yeah.
These clone armies that are supposedly for the good guys, the army for the good guys. Later in the movie, they're in that arena. They're going to be executed, the good guys, Obi-Wan and Padme and Anakin. And up on the balcony is the leader of the bad guys, the public face of the bad guys, Count Dooku. And standing next to him is Jango Fett. and they know. They see them together.
Yeah.
So, and then Jango Fett gets killed by Mace Windu. But they never once did they say to themselves, wait a minute, the guy who was trying to kill Padme is the model for all the clones, and we know that he was working for the bad guys.
Right.
There's just, how would they not then scrutinize the clone, how that came to be a little bit more closely, right?
Right.
If it's clear that the bad guy is the one is involved, like, that would be an extraordinary coincidence if just the guy on which the clone army is based is hired in an unrelated capacity as an assassin for the bad guys who are going to be fighting the clones.
And then you make this your entire military that was gifted to you by the bad guys. Let's just make our entire, let's defend the Republic exclusively
on an
with
army
soldiers cloned from our enemy.
Genetically produced from the guy who was trying to kill Padme.
It makes, it makes complete, zero
That's
sense
where you
whatsoever.
Really go awry. You can't rest. Although, of course, I don't even know if Dooku and by extension Palpatine actually were trying to kill. Like, did they want there to be Padme to be successfully killed? Probably not, because isn't Palpatine's more greater agenda the corruption of Anakin, for which Padme is an important motivating thing? Like, he didn't actually want to get her killed, probably.
Right.
So maybe he knew the assassin would do a bad job. It starts to break down.
Yeah, you're in
there.
Everything from the assassination plots to this giant war is just an endless series of false flags.
Yes.
Like, it really doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I love these movies. I love them. I would watch them right now. If you put it on, I would sit here glued to it. It would be great.
I have come around to, I think, what is the reasonable middle ground on the post-original trilogy Star Wars movies, which is that the prequels are a delightful mess with heart, right?
Yes.
There's
they
a vision.
Tried.
Yeah, there was an attempt to do something creative and new and to, you know.
And thematically relevant.
Sure.
Interesting. The fall, how democracies corrode and fall.
Right. And I mean, I think George Lucas assigned himself a task he couldn't quite complete.
Right. He didn't have the guy who made Andor yet. He could have that guy do it. It would have been great.
Yeah, it would have been great. Yeah. Well, I think this is kind of the problem of Star Wars. Like, Star Wars, the original trilogy, was a pastiche of many different elements, none of which get too deep in the source material they're drawing off. Like, you know, you can say it's partly a Dune ripoff. It's like there's some like Roman history mixed in there. Mm-hmm. There's like some like Vietnam War metaphors, right? Where the rebels are the good guys, or, you know, the Viet Cong are the good guys. But it's not like this was all like a deep and well thought out allegory. But then I think George Lucas got a little high on his own supply and is like, now I can go really deep into this, you know, these wells of historical inspiration, and he just can't quite deliver it. But there's an attempt to do something. Despite all the CGI, there does feel like there is like a flesh and blood texture to the movies, right? Whereas the subsequent ones that they've made since then
have just been sterile,
paint by numbers. We're going to do, and that nevertheless, like, you know, we're going to try to do the safest possible recreation of the original series, which then nevertheless just kind of collapses into movies that also don't make sense, but for, not because you have a mad genius who can't quite deliver, but because you have a corporate committee
board
trying to like plan everything out. It's a similar, so I was never a huge, Star Wars has never been my sci-fi obsession. I was always Star Trek, right? But I see something kind of similar that's happened with Star Trek IP, right? So you had the original shows, which were, you know, campy in their own way, but really what, particularly like, you know, the prime seasons of Next Generation with Patrick Stewart, just really well done, really good writing. Like, it is like, to quote Plinkett, it's like they're just sitting in a room talking, but like they're able to hang some really good plots and have really good performances based on that, right? Then you move on to the movies, which I feel like this was kind of like the standard, like, we're going to go in for another payday. We're going to get the actors who are willing to show up. It's like a made-for-TV kind of thing where it's cheap and, like, the plots, again, don't really make sense, but there's a creativity to it, right? But modern Star Trek is now just, like, we're going to do paint-by-numbers with some, like, SJW casting, and there's no...
God, that new show looks... I don't want to, not to validate every thing that right-wing people could get annoyed about, right about this one. That, it looks just
terrible,
awful. This
terrible
television show, it just, it looks so suffocatingly SJW-ish, right?
Woke.
It does look like that.
And I mean, Star Trek was always kind of a liberal
show. And that's
show.
Fine. And I'm not saying it's something can have politics or a social vision that is not mine. Broadly speaking, Star Trek does have that kind of dystopian liberal. That's fine. I'm not like knocking it because it doesn't reflect my politics.
Right.
It But it looks and sounds painful.
Well, it's the same aspect. It's like, this is clearly just like a corporate board being, yes, like, oh, how do we get X, Y, or Z demographic to watch, right, this show?
How do we make sure bisexual Klingons feel represented?
We will have a bisexual Klingon on the show. Yeah. That's how we're gonna do it. Yeah. And it's just like, there's no connection to people who actually like the original series. I think this was J.J. Abrams, who directed the 2009 Star Trek, which, yeah, kind of rebooted.
Yeah. I liked that movie.
It was
I know it wasn't. It was actually more Star Wars-y than Star Trek.
It was a serviceable movie that, yeah, was not really a good Star Trek, yeah, movie. Yeah. But J.J. Abrams said this himself. He's like, I was never really a Star Trek fan.
Right.
And so they turn it over to a competent director who can make a flashy, exciting, but competent,
I liked how they handled the reboot from because it's in the continuity. It's a alternate reality. I liked how they did that. I thought that was a cool idea.
It was an all right movie. But the problem is you are excluding people who have some connection to the actual show and, yeah, actually like the show. And so then what do you become? It's like you're just using kind of Star Trek as a skin to run another blockbuster movie. And the way you try to like get the Star Trek fans back on board is just having these like really annoying like references, like wink at the camera, like, oh, you remember this from the original show? We're going to have the red shirt die. You know, it's like, okay, come, yeah, on. Yeah.
So, well, I wasn't done bashing Star Wars yet.
Oh yeah, please.
The later ones, mm-hmm, should be, everyone involved in them should be confined to some low rung of hell. I hate them so much. And actually the first of the new ones,
they should be scruffy nerf herders. Yeah.
Exactly. Was fine and would have been made fine if the second two were any good. That the middle one is offensive. It's so bad. Now, it is the most original and comes from the director, Rian Johnson, who I have no problem with. Otherwise, I love the Knives Out movies. Tried to do something creatively different. It's just, I didn't like what he did. I don't know what to say. I didn't like the choices it made.
Yeah.
They were offensive to me, and they were offensive to most people who like Star Wars. And that he was like, I'm going to subvert your expectations. You succeeded. My expectations were I would like it, and I didn't. Congratulations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the third one was just such just fan service. It felt like a fan fiction film. And without any attempt to explain anything, or Palpatine returns somehow, placeholder kind of, we'll come up with why this makes sense later. Oops, we forgot. So bad. I don't know which of them is worse. I mean, that one is probably worse, although I hate that second one so much I wouldn't ever want to watch it again. I don't, mm-hmm, know. So bad. All bad. But the original ones are, you were describing them accurately, and they're so fondly remembered for their, mm-hmm, time. I've rewatched those two, and there are a lot of elements of them that don't hold up. That third one isn't as good as I remembered. I remember loving it as a kid.
Yeah.
I remember watching that one the most as a kid. Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
The Luke, Vader, Emperor stuff, great. The first act of the movie, and I remember loving the Jabba's palace escape. Doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
What is the plan to get Han out? They're all there undercover. At one point, Leia and Luke and Lando. It's like all characters with an L name to the center of the stage for some reason. Like, what is there? It's the most convoluted plot. They say the things happening in the prequels are convoluted. What are they doing there?
Yeah.
And then ultimately what they end up doing is murdering everyone,
right,
to free Han. If they were going to do that anyway, why didn't he just go in lightsabers blazing?
Right, right, yeah.
Very silly.
Kind of colors the moral character of the rebellion too, I guess, yeah, right?
Yeah. Well, and the prequels allow you to reflect on some of the they in terms of the cannon fodder troops, like it's clones versus robots, which softens the moral kind of complexity you feel for it. Although the cartoon shows do give you more insight into the clones and in a really cool way,
which kind of makes, if anything, like it's much worse, right?
Yeah.
It's like you're breeding these guys to be slave soldiers,
yeah,
who like the best thing they can hope for is to survive the like World War I meat grinder you throw them,
right,
into, and then like die,
to survive long enough to become irrelevant. Yeah,
yeah, then like die at 40 because you've accelerated their aging process. Like,
yeah,
that's the most moral. Like, that's very morally suspect in my mind.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I always was very irritated by the Ewoks, as many people.
Oh yeah, they
were,
well,
right?
Everyone's that. They do,
yeah, because I thought the stormtroopers were cool, and then they're just like being killed by these little teddy bears. Yeah.
Who throw rocks at them? And why are they even wearing body armor if
you trip
and you die?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's all just kind of ridiculous. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think the only one that like really holds up as like this is an excellent sci-fi movie is the second one, Empire Strikes Back. That one is fascinating and excellent.
Because it has so much. Having watched the originals again, what I really liked was basically Vader interacting with stormtroopers and
Imperial officers. Yeah.
That movie's got a lot of them on the ship. His, you know, hunting the Millennium Falcon because he wants to get to Luke, interacting with people. That's all really great. And really, throwing my pen at you again.
Ah.
The environment of it is cool and moody and, like, the way the ship looks. And you got him in his little tank, you know, and it opens up and you see his helmet going, oh, he was a person. It's just interesting.
Really. The Cloud City environment of, like, steam and tunnels. And, yeah, that's all great.
Like a little laser tag.
Yeah. But, see, this is, again, this is why I was never – I mean, as a kid, of course, I enjoyed – I liked the prequels when I saw them at six because I didn't really understand what a bad movie was. I liked the original trilogy enough as a kid, and I got really into like some of the clone video games and stuff because I thought the stormtroopers were cool.
They are cool,
and that's what I really liked about it. So I always thought the stormtroopers were cool. So I liked the fact that the clones were kind of the good guys.
But
there's just not a huge amount of depth there, and the prequels try to backfill some
depth.
But I don't think necessarily successfully. Where Star Trek, I think, holds up. A lot of moral quandaries. A lot of good philosophical, you know, half the episodes are some moral quandary of we intervene and we could kill millions or we don't and hundreds of thousands die and stuff like that. Yeah.
We could establish a fascist dictatorship in order to maybe be with Natalie Portman, or we could not. pretty clear moral choices for a lot of American teenagers. All right, let's do something a little bit political again. We wanted to talk more about that Rand appearance on Rogan, where he talked about Dr. Fauci, the quest, Rand's own personal side quest to prosecute Dr. Fauci, cause I find very noble and wish we could succeed at. Of course, Fauci was pardoned. You have thoughts, I know.
I do. So, firstly, we can talk directly about Anthony Fauci for a little bit if you want.
Yes.
So
reprehensible man.
Yes.
We don't have we ain't got no Fauci candles in here.
No.
Saint Anthony. No.
Unfauci my podcast. Yes. Yeah. So it's peculiar that when Biden pardoned Fauci. What period of time?
Did I know exactly what you're going to say. Yeah. I was explaining this to Andrew Heaton. 2014.
Yes. And what happened in 2014? The Obama administration issued a restriction on the federal government funding gain of function research. Fauci has long, I wrote a whole feature about this for a reason called Fauci's Pandemic. And Anthony Fauci had long been a proponent of this research and gain-of-function research.
He's the nation's foremost advocate of it.
Yes, which was always very controversial.
Always controversial.
As evidenced by the fact that the Obama administration decided to pause this research.
Yes, they read it. They go, you're doing what?
Yeah.
Stop.
Yes. Because
any sane person sees that you're mutating viruses to make them more dangerous in unsafe laboratory conditions in China and says, can we think about that for two more seconds?
Right. And the administration did. They attempted to impose upon Fauci's bureaucracy these restrictions on doing this kind of research, which, as you mentioned, you take viruses from the wild, then you create hybrid viruses and attempt to make them more virulent. Mm-hmm. And the justification for this kind of research is if you can predict how viruses evolve, then you can know where in the wild we should be looking for the next one that's going to leap over into humans, or you can develop vaccines to address outbreak when it does happen. The criticism of this has always been you don't know what viruses you're going to produce. And if you have some sort of lab leak incident, it could cause a giant global pandemic. If you go back and read the press coverage and the scientific debates about this research pre-2020, very mainstream concerns about how this is very risky and it has very few benefits. Fauci was always pushing back on that, saying explicitly there's risks, but I think it's worth it. And then when the 2014 ban comes down, he works to subvert it, right?
Yes. He swore in a deposition, He was deposed and asked whether he personally signed off on exemptions to continue funding this research, because it, even with the pause in place, national security, you could do it anyway. And he was like, I may have, I don't recall, or I might have had my deputy do it. Very evasive.
Yeah, and we know from public, you know, like real dogged journalism, public records requests that have come out from NIH when they were doing this research in Wuhan, right, and they developed viruses that looked more virulent and definitely met the definition of the gain-of-function pause, NIH initially says, hey, stop this research. It looks like it falls under this pause. And then something happens within NIH, and then they come back and say, keep going. Keep doing this research. But report to us if the viruses you make, you know, break these thresholds of virulence or whatever. They do break those thresholds, and then NIH keeps telling them, go ahead, keeps funding them. And then, lo and behold, right before the pandemic, these progress reports that they're supposed to submit, we don't get the last one until many years later, after these investigations, say, you know, showing that, again, the viruses were very virulent. And so that's why the pause goes back to 2014, because Anthony Fauci was almost certainly violating the law going back to that initial pause.
Right. They didn't give him a pardon for just his time period overseeing the coronavirus response, which starts in 2020. They did not give him immunity, blanket immunity for his entire time in government service, which goes back to, I think, the 80s or maybe before. It starts in the year that is most suspect. I think that's
and
very
most,
telling.
Most relevant to the origins of the COVID
pandemic. I think a lot of libs wrongly think we're trying to put Fauci in jail because we don't like mask mandates or social distancing. I don't like those things, but he was giving advice that I think is bad. I don't want to jail all my political opponents. No. We're talking about moral and financial and legal culpability for the series of events that most of our intelligence agencies now think caused the pandemic.
And the circumstantial evidence is just so overwhelmingly on favor of a lab leak origin plausibly caused by U.S. government or underwritten by U.S. government.
I mean, this is a huge deal. Like, this is, and then we put him in charge of fixing it.
Yeah, right.
This is like if you put John Hammond in charge of your worldwide dinosaur outbreak elimination plan. I mean, that is what I consider Fauci to be. He's a Dr. Frankenstein, a John Hammond, a Qyburn, a scientist who, for science's own sake, feels no constraints and wants to do it out of this genuine, maybe intellectual curiosity he has.
Yeah.
But okay, we as policymakers have to constrain that, particularly for government-funded research. And like, if this research is so important, I've said this a couple times, can we do it in Antarctica or on the moon? Mm-hmm. But they were doing it in China.
Right.
When we had very little direct control over it.
Yeah, and explicitly because it was cheaper to do there because they used fewer biosafety protocols. Yeah. It is like a literal Bush did 9/11 kind of story.
It absolutely is. Which we also believe.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Who else would have done it?
Yeah.
Pakistan maybe.
Yeah.
But, So, I mean, it was nice and it was nice to see Rand make that case again. I mean, a lot of what they discussed when it came to COVID, was not new to me if you've been following these issues. But and the pardon prevents, certainly a criminal investigation. Fauci is now refusing to testify. Again, before, you know, Rand's committee, you know, the administration is supposed to come out with more gain of function restrictions. We're still waiting on those.
Please. Restrict me.
Yeah.
Do it.
But so you know what I found very interesting about the Joe Rogan interview? Because, again, like a lot of the things that they said, if you watch Joe Rogan or
familiar
you
it's probably familiar to the listeners. They talk about that stuff a lot.
Yes. But you know what it really drove home to me was that the overlap between the like podcast bro universe and conservatives, right? That alliance, the overlap is just COVID.
It's COVID.
It's literally just COVID. In fact, to illustrate this for our readers, listeners, viewers, I want to do a little exercise.
Okay. Let's do it.
Yes. Okay. So I have my own little list here.
Okay? Oh.
So I'm going to have you imagine, if you can.
Okay.
Okay. Summon up in your mind the modal Joe Rogan listener, right?
Okay.
And I'm going to read you a list of policy positions, right? And you're going to say, modal Joe Rogan listener, is he for, against, or maybe you just have no idea what he thinks, distinct from just some random person you pluck off the street.
Sure.
Okay?
I would never admit I don't know, so I'll have a
very good.
Right,
okay. Single-payer healthcare.
Probably four.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. A tax on the billionaires.
Probably for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Gay marriage.
Probably for that, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Slightly for.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I don't like that gay shit, but probably for it.
Yeah. You can say that. Yeah. Marijuana legalization.
Four. Yeah. Definitely four.
Okay, and so from that profile, you would assume your average Joe Rogan listener is rather liberal.
Yes.
Yeah, a Democrat, right? Okay, now let me read you a subsequent list of positions, okay?
Okay.
Masks. Mask mandates.
Oh, yeah. Against.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure, against.
Even just the efficacy of COVID masks.
Yeah, against.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The COVID vaccine.
Against.
Yep. How about natural origin versus lab leak origin of the pandemic? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Lockdowns.
Against.
Yes. Okay, so that is the Joe Rogan listener.
Yes.
That is also the conservative positions on all these things, too.
The Joe Rogan listener is a liberal but right-wing on COVID.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's the entire overlap right there.
You're correct.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Yeah, like even, you know, him and Rand argued about food stamps and whether, you know, they...
Yeah, Rogan was not going for any of that.
No, he did not really like the idea of, like, restricting...
Food stamps at all.
No, he didn't. They argued about immigration, you know, all these kind of things. But when it came to COVID, it was just like there's complete and total alignment. And that's all that is. I feel like... So, historically, pandemics normally don't really sit as, like, cultural memories, you know?
Because they're unpleasant. We don't want to remember
They're unpleasant, and then they go...
I don't want to remember it. It was horrible.
But nevertheless, we must.
Yeah.
You know, we must confront the evil in which we lived under. But, like, you know, Spanish flu, we remember that it happened, but, you know, people... If you read your... You know, high school history textbook.
You're right. It barely registers.
Yeah. Or
Lost in the Fog of World War One.
Yeah. The Great Plagues of London or whatever. You know, right after the Revolution, we had, you know, cholera outbreaks and all this kind of stuff. People just kind of forget this stuff, right? But COVID, I think we'll probably kind of forget that too. But like, this was a huge shift, a change in alignment in our politics. And it's created this unnatural alliance, I think, between people who are otherwise liberal and then just like normie conservatives. Yeah.
Yeah. It's certainly me at my most, I would argue it's mostly just libertarian ideals, but certainly I can let my right wing side out much more comfortably on any COVID subject, you know, as I do commentary often on platforms that have significant right of center audiences. I feel very comfortable agreeing with them on everything having to do with COVID. And since we've moved on to some of those things and now we have a Republican administration that's doing all these things I don't like, it's much harder to, you know, defend or agree with things the administration is doing now because it's not related to COVID. If it was related to COVID and it was Democrats, I could be against it and the viewers would be against it because we all hate it. But
the connective tissue between
like you're right.
Joe Rogan listeners and
you're
conservatives is all COVID, but then also the connective tissue between libertarians and the right is just COVID in the aftermath, right? Because I mean, on every other possible issue you could imagine, the administration, with the exception, I guess, of Doge, right,
that all
fizzled and is gone. It's like this is like the most big government conservative administration I think maybe we've ever had, right?
It's frustrating that there isn't more to say about it positively.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you're right.
When the foreign policy is very much a mixed bag and increasingly mixed to – I mean, it's – I don't even think right-wing libertarian people are particularly interested in defending it on foreign policy grounds because it is becoming quite interventionist in many ways. You can argue that each of those interventions is good for whatever reason or this time it'll work, but it's certainly not in keeping with – what they wanted. And then the economic stuff is just
terrible.
Is just universally so bad. Tariffs and trade policies contradicting what libertarians want, what normie conservatives want. It's just satisfying a tiny constituency on the right that was just very anti-trade and then otherwise basically what used to be Democratic priorities.
Or the administration taking like literal stakes in private companies, right?
Do you know he called Elizabeth Warren this week?
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Just to chat, just to catch up?
Speaking of
radicalized wine mom types.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Oof.
School marm, yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Is that your least favorite senator,
Elizabeth
Warren?
Yes, by far.
Yeah.
And
her loathing of anyone who would try to make a buck in this world is just so off-putting.
The sound of her listening to her is deeply unpleasant. We had to play, we reacted to this, whatever she'd said on Rising, and we had to play two clips of her speaking. And by the second, I'm like, I don't even want to hear that. Hear this. I can't stand it.
Yeah.
It's painful.
I used to, this is good evidence.
Poisonous ideas she represents.
Poisonous ideas but expressed shrilly. Yeah.
She hates the achievement. She hates human achievement in the category of economics. And her whole philosophy is that the government should protect consumers from the consequences of their own freely made choices. And my way of having government help consumers will be to fine companies. Fines that in every single case, they just pass on to the consumers anyway in the form of higher prices. If she gets her agenda, everything will cost more. And she'll say, you're welcome.
Yeah, totally. Thank you, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, thanks for that.
It's not even really protecting consumers, though, because it's all about Amazon shouldn't be able to sell you a generic Amazon-branded phone charger or whatever else, right? Because we have It's unfair.
Right. It's for Amazon's competitors.
Yes, yes.
Which are not a protected category in antitrust understanding, right? It's the theory of antitrust is consumer harm, not they're not – they're required to not do what is termed anti-competitive measures because that would hurt consumers, not because they have to be fair to their competitors.
Right. And I mean, this is a common misunderstanding of the free market position, but we're not pro-business. We are pro-business, give me what I want, right?
Yeah.
I don't care if the small business goes out of business or if the large corporation fails or whatever else. It's just like, what are you providing and who can provide it to me cheaper?
I don't object to bigness itself.
No. And I mean, it's in this way, she like really is just like, a prototypical Rand villain, right?
Yes.
Where
yes.
she hates at the end of the day is greatness and achievement,
yes.
right? Yeah. I was going back and, because I was trying to find the clip of where Ayn Rand talks about, based on our Mad Men discussion, where she talks about, where she's asked a question about advertisers and then gives a response. And I was actually wrong. It was a Milton Friedman interview where this comes up.
Ah.
Yes. But it was interesting watching some of her early interviews going back to the 60s and the 70s where debates that, I mean, outside of Elizabeth Warren's own brain, we don't really have so much anymore where it's like if we have a free market economy, it's not about, you know, healthcare costs or whatever else. It's all about like, well, wouldn't the little business be harmed? You know, how can we let – if we let, you know, the big companies run everything, then they'll charge much higher prices or whatever. And it's ironic because at the time you did have huge cartelization of industry and the big businesses were charging higher prices. And then allegedly the government is there to stop this, but they're the ones creating it. So just kind of like old economy issues that they were debating. But yeah, and so Elizabeth Warren is like the old school Rand villain in this sense. And Ayn Rand, of course, we love her. She's like, let her rip.
Yeah. We love our girl. In Rand, we trust. Speaking of attacks on productive people, challenges to capitalism, government attempts to suppress human achievement, OnlyFans. James Fishback, this is this. Speaking of going along for the ride with all these jokers, this is interesting character, an insignificant one, but who knows? Maybe he'll become a big deal. Running in Florida for governor against Byron Donalds, who's the well-known conservative
Trump-endorsed
guy. James Fishback is just some guy who seems to have tried out every way to be an important person on the right. He was very pro-Israel. He wrote for the Free Press. Now he's America's first Groyper candidate. He's
truly
saying actually racist.
Rather despicable things about Vivek Ramaswamy.
So his
competitor in the actual race. But then also the way he talks, it sounds like he's running against Vivek in Ohio.
Yeah, he hates Vivek.
And he said some pretty horribly racist things about him. Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, it's interesting to watch.
And people probably think, you know, we say he said horrible racist things. We're always like, I'm still having my 20 teens brain. Like, oh, did he say like, where are you from?
Or, you know, microaggression.
Kind of microaggression. No. He says epithets.
Like one of his jokes is he's talking to some voters and he's like, I told Vivek there's a fork in the road. And Vivek says, what's a fork?
Like, right. Actual racism. Indian people smell. Ha ha. Like,
right.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah. I mean, people should be glad to know that he's polling abysmally and his fund. I mean, there was a report that came out saying that he'd fundraised $950.
But he's going to shoot to the top on this tax OnlyFans.
Yeah,
he's
so it's a 50%.
50% tax on OnlyFans creators. I attacked this idea on Rising because, well, obviously we're libertarians. We don't think there should be taxes and, you know, people should, you know, make their money is wherever they want. You can morally object to it. We don't care at all. But also, I was thinking through the mechanism of this. You can't have a tax on a specific company. OnlyFans is a platform. Mm-hmm. So it would have to be some kind of – it would have to be worded as a tax on content creation or internet platforms that would just all of these independent media people – some of which are, you know, Fuentes-type people. Well, this is an attack on their livelihood too, is it not?
Right, totally. Yeah, sure. So it would be individual content creators or the way you word it, would it apply to Substack writers or whoever
else? If it was worded so it just applies to OnlyFans, okay, then they'll go on Patreon.
Right, yeah. Whatever. And also that would be unconstitutional.
That would be unconstitutional.
You can't just, like, single out a particular company and name it in legislation, you know. I mean, porn, I think, is a bad force in society. But in
you would
a,
say that.
Yeah, I would
say that. Religious person.
Yeah. I understand the temptations of our modern world all too well. But for that reason, it's bad, right?
Yeah.
You know, at a minimum, this is making the government then – it's like why aren't cigarettes illegal now even though we have a massive, you know, fiendish public health bureaucracy? Because cigarettes –
it's revenue.
Yeah, it's because they pay for your state's Medicaid system because of the master settlement agreement from the 90s or whenever, right? Mm-hmm. That's why cigarettes are still legal even though the number of smokers continues to decline, right? We would just do the same thing with pornography here. We would make the state a partner in the pornography business and they would then be addicted to that revenue, right?
Right. Then the state would want would do promotional advertising.
Right, yeah.
Join OnlyFans. Right. Yeah, it'd be the opposite. They're thinking of this as a way to stigmatize, you know, save your daughters from joining OnlyFans. They act like every woman in America has an OnlyFans account now.
Right. And then they would try to crack down on the competitors to OnlyFans because this is where the revenue is coming from. They would just cartelize the industry.
Yeah.
I don't know what would be like the equivalent of what would be the porn equivalent of like harm reduction vaping? I'm not sure, but they would squash it, whatever it is. Yeah.
Oh my God. That was strip clubs.
Strip clubs. Okay, yeah. They would
right,
go after
the some of the objection to the, even though, again, this is kind of like our discussion about, you know, teen, unmarried sexual behavior and drinking is down and that's being treated as a bad thing.
Right.
Like, this is, in the context of sex work, this is pornography, which is safer for the producers of it than traditional sex work involving, you know, pimps and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably even than stripping environments, although I don't know, many establishments are probably perfectly safe, but it doesn't involve actual physical contact with some customer, so it's safer for the women or whoever. So you're saying that's bad though, because some of these people are saying that's bad because it's adding to the alienation of the consumer because you're not participating with an actual, you're not touching an actual person, and that's bad.
Yeah.
So, can't make anybody happy.
No. Yeah, Richard Hanania, a unique thinker, he had an essay recently where it's like, pornography is bad, prostitution, that's the honorable sexual deviancy.
Yeah, is a sailor on shore leave purchasing a woman of the night.
Yeah,
the
you can get get your Nazi tattoo, or you can go have sex with
like
a prostitute.
Like Grand Plantner.
Right,
Grand
Plantner,
Well, we wish him well, this James Fishback character.
Do we?
No, I don't wish him well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I saw this observation on X, and I think it's correct where it's like, hopefully this convinces more mainstream Republicans that they don't need to cater to the groiper base of the Republican Party, such as it is, because that's his target audience, and he's polling abysmally, right? Like, So hopefully this is a message that you can actually turn down the racism dial a little and still win an election.
We got to bring back – I've said this to you a couple times, and I strongly believe it. You know, it's Martin Luther King Day on Monday. That guy, he had some good ideas that have fallen out of fashion, and that the left made fall out of fashion, colorblindness. We just don't see color. You know, that became something you weren't supposed to say, I don't see color.
Right.
That became something
that was the bad thing,
woke is objected to, because how dare you pretend that your color is not so central to your identity and has formed so much of your experience, right? Mm-hmm. That was what the woke revolution, we weren't calling it wokeness then, but whatever it was that took place over the 20-teens was to delegitimize ideas of colorblindness, because identity and racial identity, other identities mm-hmm. are so central to you and so impactful, and we should be not ignoring them, we should be noticing them all the time and talking about how they complicate things. And that was a horrible idea to normalize and to project onto people who do harbor racist views.
Right.
Like, they're like, you keep screaming at me that I'm white, that whiteness is this important force, that I should think from an identitarian perspective as a white person, that you're saying you're thinking about that as a black or brown or whatever person, but I'm not doing that. You've told me to be conscious about my race. Mm-hmm. This is the result.
Yep.
This is what comes of that. Hyperfixation on race is bad. I resent it. I resent now how much we openly discuss every time something bad happens. Everybody shoots up a school, robs somebody, somebody gets stabbed, somebody gets run over, somebody gets killed.
What's the
race?
We
have to go, is it Islam? Is it white man? Mm-hmm. Is it black person? Is mm-hmm. it, like, we have to do, and then it's like, oh, it wasn't my kind. It was,
right.
Oh, good, mm-hmm. Islam. Okay,
now I can criticize this crime because it's not some affinity group that I'm supposed to be part of, some collective that I'm supposed to be part
that
of.
It is just, it is rotten.
Yeah.
We should not do that. We should... I want to not even know. I want to genuinely look at you and not know if you could be an Apache or something. You could be in war paint, and I want to not notice it.
Very
yeah,
good. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
we got to go back to it.
Martin Luther King Jr. You know, conservatives didn't like him during his time.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back and read some of the early libertarian critiques of Martin Luther King from, you know, his economic views are very socialist.
Yeah, economic views that are not.
But, I mean, his the thing that he's remembered for and that he was most successful on was having this kind of like civic nationalism approach to race, you mm-hmm. know? The Declaration of Independence is a promissory note, right,
yes.
of, you know, people should be treated equally. I hope that, you know, the sons of slaves and the sons of slave owners can
yes.
sit at the table of brotherhood.
That's,
like,
that's
such
the
an
good
inspiring,
shit. That's the good stuff.
A completely inspiring
yes.
and correct attitude to
it's
take
beautiful.
To a country where it is multiracial and we're all going to have to live together.
Yes.
That is the correct idea. And the idea that we should get rid of it for some obsessive focus on structural inequities or whatever, which allegedly Martin Luther King didn't understand, which is itself ridiculous. Like, you're swapping out a set of fundamentally good ideas for a set of fundamentally bad ideas. And this is why our discourse on this stuff has gotten so poisonous. And yeah, it has welled up people who would have otherwise at least had to publicly commit to some vision of colorblindness now just talk like screeching racist from the 1960s.
I see and encounter more racial resentment than ever before. This has gotten worse. I think there's no way around it.
Mm-hmm.
That I see and encounter more openly just race, even if it's not mean spirit, just racial noticing than mm-hmm. I remember when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair to say?
100%.
I hate to do, oh, things used to be better when I was a kid, but I do think this is one of those things that has gotten markedly worse, at least in the domain of political commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people in their personal lives are not, you know, always going to this well, but in our politics, it's very much a part of things. They're trying to get out, and different groups are trying to, you know, people who want a more defensive of Israel foreign policy
mm-hmm.
will be like, you know, rightly calling out anti-Jewish bigotry. But then some of them saying, yeah, anti-Arab bigotry is the right one to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the opposite for people who mm-hmm. want a less supportive of Israel foreign policy. They'll say, it's so wrong to be racist against Arab people. They're not out mm-hmm. to get us. The Jews are the ones who are really, mm-hmm. and that's all bad.
very bad.
You know, debate the policies on their own merits, not...
Yeah, like what's our foreign policy interest here? Not like
it's not the Jews hurting you. It's the Somalians. It's not the Somalians. Why are you concentrating on the Somalians? It's the Jews running everything. This is all bad. This is just. There's no way. This is lose.
This is not Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. Where we focus on race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They even tried to ruin that.
Yeah.
In a game, it's okay to have characteristics for a species. And they got rid of they're trying to get rid of that. That like I think it, you know, you play in my Dungeons and Dragons group, and one of the things I find enjoyable, you can play against a stereotype. Like in my universe, a lot of, for instance, in one of the campaigns we did, a lot of the orcs are reformed and are running a hotel. And that has comedic value only because orcs do have an intrinsic property.
Right.
So the humor is derived from that. That doesn't mean there can't be a smart orc or a nice orc, but it is amusing because they have a set of default warlike evil characteristics that we know from Lord of the Rings and other things.
If they
tried to get rid of that. They tried to say orcs now just like, literally, in the promotional materials, they like travel.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's going back to the, you know, wokeification or the corporate wokeification of Star Wars or Star Trek. It's like we have to take out everything that gave this texture and felt real. Yeah.
Yeah.
We should, as libertarians, we should particularly reject this like obsessive focus on race, because in addition to just buying into notions of collectivism and critical theory about whatever.
Racism is the lowest form of collectivism. She said that.
She said it.
Yep.
Yeah. And she was correct. But also, like, I feel like this was actually the thing that kind of, like, punctured the libertarian moment bubble.
Because
if you go back to 2010, which I would say, like, this was when, like, you know, maybe you could say it started with Ron Paul in 2007. We weren't quite there. But by 2010...
The wave was ascending.
Tea Party, where it was like both we really messed up when it came to George Bush's cronyism and wars, and then also we're under this threat. Yeah, bailouts of large crony capitalists. And then also now we're under threat from Barack Obama's hypocrisy on foreign policy and then his big government healthcare plans, right? This was like the rising tide of libertarianism where the conservatives were all getting on board. They at least had to talk like they were libertarians.
Yes.
And then you could make a lot of inroads to the left and liberals as well who are like, hey, I voted for ending the war on terror. I voted for legalizing marijuana.
Yes.
I voted for legalizing gay marriage. And they're not doing any of this either, right? But then where does this like start to kind of fall apart? It was the Black Lives Matter stuff of 2014.
Yes,
it was Ferguson where, you know, I remember very well, like when the initial Ferguson stuff happened, all the conservatives, you know, who hated Barack Obama were also like, yeah, this is police abuse. This is terrible. Rand Paul was really good on this. Even someone like Ted Cruz was really good on this. And then it became Black Lives Matter, right? And, you know, you can...
It became a race thing instead of about government being accountable to its citizens.
Right.
In a tactically harmful way, and then in a just very directly harmful way, as it turned out that so many of the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement are just fraudsters who misappropriated, used it to buy mansions and then thought a kind of social media performative activism was accomplishing something, when all it was accomplishing was fueling this awful backlash.
If you look at the Eric Gardner killing and see a cop choking out a guy for selling loose cigarettes outside a convenience store, as a libertarian or a conservative, like it's very clear who the good guy and the bad, or at least who the bad guy is, right? If that instance is framed as another result of structural racism and here's the white guy versus the black guy, then the politics gets really scrambled really quickly and people don't start talking about the individual's relationship to the state. They start talking about the relationships of one racial group versus another. And that's been a disaster for libertarian politics and libertarians' currency in the modern political moment. And now here we are, where you have an administration where they talk about invading rapist hordes from other countries, and people, you know, primary candidates feel like they have to say some racist things. Yeah, explicitly.
Yeah. And especially with all the ICE stuff going on, I think it helpful, again, tactically, just arguing about tactics, what will bring more people into our limited government vision I would argue for talking more about the rights of people against their government. I never try to use inflammatory language. We need some level of policing in society. Police, I think, do a valuable function. That doesn't mean they should be totally unaccountable. Of course, we want, just as the bureaucrats who run whatever departments we have to interact with should be good at their jobs, mm-hmm. and the good ones should get promoted and the bad ones should be disciplined and fired. And why that should not obviously be different from the police. That shouldn't be different for teachers. Mm-hmm. And the same kind of protections that teachers unions have, police unions have. And neither side recognize right. Very few people outside the libertarian movement can recognize that all of the bad incentives for public teachers and the protections they get from their unions obviously apply to the police and vice versa. These are again. It's not an anti-police thing any more than it would be an anti-teachers thing. Education is important too. These are important roles that we want good people to do and to get rewarded for it, and we want bad people not to do. Mm-hmm. And it's not about an animus greater than that. But we should be, like J.D. Vance talked about. I think it was J.D. Vance who said absolute immunity. Or Stephen Miller, someone said,
you should be able to do literally whatever you want. Should, yeah.
So if a ICE officer shoots his wife and he just has absolute immunity against – no, they have qualified immunity. Even that is a contentious subject that we've written at Reason why we think it's gone too far and should be reined in. But they don't – no one should want a government whose enforcers can harm you with impunity and face no repercussions. Mm-hmm. That's not – and it's not a race thing. It's not even a immigrant, pro-immigrants thing. It's not taking the side of any specific victims. It's just saying we can't have a government whose enforcers have no consequences no matter what. No one wants that, right?
If you focus,
it's absurd.
If you focus on the government's relationship to the individual, this becomes insanely clear and obvious for everyone who isn't an insane fascist, right? Yeah. If you make it some big cultural argument, then people's brains get scrambled really quickly. I guess, one thing I would add too, it's like, the focus on – obsessive focus on race, it was bad because it shifted a lot of people who would otherwise be in the limited government libertarian camp and maybe explicitly identify as libertarian into just like a very right-wing drift where they're now going along with a big government administration. But then it was also bad on the other side too. Like there was a smaller cadre of libertarians who really embraced the like – they're like, oh, we should just add state oppression to the woke hierarchy of oppressions, right? Mm-hmm. Cancel culture is good because this is a way of people reclaiming their own individual autonomy in addition to fighting the state or whatever. And that has also proven a complete disaster. Mm-hmm. And anyone who like talked like that has since just become like a normie lib, right?
Yes.
So it's like these things like trying to like attach libertarianism to whichever aspect of the culture war, you think that's going to give you some wider cultural cachet, when in fact what it really does is just import the culture war into your movement for limited government. And it's been a disaster. Yeah.
It's been a disaster. I remember people like Matt Walsh, for instance. You know, a lot of people know who he is. It is very high profile conservative pundit on
not
social
Matt
media.
Welch.
Not our Matt Welsh, our beloved Matt Welsh of Reason magazine in the fifth column. This is Daily Wire Matt Walsh. I remember that he used to write and tweet 10 years ago about police abuse stories all the time. He was worked up about it. He was like, this is wrong. Videos of people being – some of the ones you've mentioned, Eric Garner, those types of things. Mm-hmm. But now someone like that can't have that view because it's become if you're a conservative, you got to defend everything the police do.
Right. Or if there is a police abuse of a white guy, then the discussion becomes what it's like, oh, well, why isn't the liberal media talking about this? Because he's white, right?
Yeah.
Or then it's the flip side.
Then
if
we'll
it's
be
a
like,
black
it was
guy.
Talked
yeah.
About. Yeah.
Right. It's like, oh, we talk about how the police, killed this one black guy. Well, we don't talk about black on white crime or whatever else.
Right.
It's so tiresome.
Why are they fundraising for the black guy who killed the white guy? I'm going to fundraise for the white guy who killed the black guy. Color blindness. I don't even see it. I don't know.
It gets you nothing. We're not getting to a better place in our politics or in our own personal lives by focusing on this kind of stuff. Yeah.
I refuse to see race now.
That's
what I'm going to do. I'm going to manifest the world I want.
Hopefully that
gets... We're just formless blobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're
You're looking
a little...
extra blobby and formless today, Christian.
Yeah, you know, everyone bitches about, like, oh, we're not just, you know, an economic zone of atomistic individuals. And it's like, whatever the flaws of that worldview, it was actually probably a little bit better than what we have now. Yeah.
One of my only other things I really wanted to get to today is Wordle strategy.
Ooh, okay, that's actually pretty good.
You play Wordle?
Yes.
You do. Which ones do you do? You do Wordle. You're so good at.
Which I've actually kind of stopped doing because it's not fun anymore. Because I just Wordle.
Ladies and gentlemen, this man can. Speaking of shapeless blobs, you can identify any shapeless blob as what country it is. You're amazing at that.
The only ones I have trouble with are some of the like Caribbean islands or Pacific island.
Are you good with flags?
Yeah, I'm very good at it. I also play a flaggle. Yeah,
okay.
So.
My friend Matt McDonald is amazing at flags, too.
Yes, I would say I know almost every single nation's flag.
That's amazing. I'm terrible at flags.
Really?
And not so great at geography. But
Now, geography, I
mean, I know, you know, world, round, continents, etc.
I won
water.
Two geography Bs in my time in elementary school. Yeah, I got a $25 Target gift card.
Buzz.
Yeah.
So I do Wordle, I do Connections, that's about it now. I used to do Strands, but Wordle and Connections every day.
Yeah, Strands, just like if I'm bored and just want to dick around on my phone.
The numbers one, I find very frustrating. I do it sometimes.
I really like Pips. It's say what you will about the New York Times, but like I feel like they're pretty good at creating games that are challenging, that you will always win.
Yes.
Right at the end of the day, and that's exactly what you want. No one wants to lose at Wordle or Connections or whatever, but you do want a little bit of challenge to make it interesting.
Yeah.
So what is your Wordle strategy?
So I always pick. I try to pick a different word every time to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Often it's some. word that rhymes with stare, S-T-A-R-E.
Yeah, it's kind of lame if you have
if you
one
just
go-to
do stare
word,
every
yeah.
time.
Or ado, sometimes people use, which is actually not so good.
Ado is not that good. Mm-hmm. I do stare, spare, scare, share. Mm-hmm. I do, you know, those kinds of variations. If I do stare and then it's all nothing, I do fluid for my second word.
Okay,
I like
that's
that.
Good. Mm-hmm.
Now, I do try to play where once you have a letter correctly, you have to use it there.
Hard mode, right? Yeah,
you can't
make guesses that you know to be wrong from the information.
In order to just eliminate more letters, which Wordle's bot does not do. And I love consulting the Wordle bot, but then oftentimes it would be like, well, this would have been the most efficient word. I'm like, but I can't use that one because I already know where the F is.
It is a little frustrating because after you do the Wordle, it'll rank you by like, you know, if the AI was doing it, the Wordle bot was doing it, and then gives you a score out of 1 out of 99.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because if you do play on hard mode where it's like,
playing on hard mode.
It's not playing on hard mode. So therefore it's like literally just trying to get to the lowest number of guesses. And so like I get mad when it's like it downgrades my score because I was playing the hard mode, which I feel like there should the Wordle bot should they should have some tweak where it's like it's also ranking based on hard mode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to mix it up too. I'll use whatever. Ghost, frost, truck.
Nice.
Whatever. Stare, I mean, I think is kind of the canonical best word to use.
Yeah. I love when it tells me the Wordle bot sometimes will say, this is so satisfying when it says these words. That was a good choice and a distinctive one.
Ooh,
today was played
no
by fewer than
0.1%
of our players.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That feels good.
It really does. So have you ever in Wordle, have you ever the right answer is a word you hadn't heard of?
Yes, it's happened a couple times. Mm-hmm. Not all that often.
Yeah, there was some like sewing term that I didn't know. There was a recent one where I don't even think this should count as a word. Oomph, you know? It's like an onomatopoeia, right?
Did I get that one? I did get that one.
Yeah.
That was hard. This week I got it in two on one of them.
Ooh.
I can't remember. And I have once, I've gotten it on one. One time
just
there was one of
luck.
Those, it was, the word was scare or spare or something.
On January 1 and January 2, I got it in two guesses, so you know this year is going to be a good year.
Yeah.
Okay, with Connections, do you...
Connections is great. I think Connections is the best of all these games. Connections, I could play for hours. I love Connections.
It can be a little frustrating because...
Oh, yes, it can.
The categories can be arbitrary, right?
Yes.
Or at least there's plausible other connections you could make. But that's why you have to do the entire board in your head first.
Well,
right?
You have to... The dummy category.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make sure you're not falling prey to it.
Yes.
The trickiest thing they do is when the dummy category is actually what it is, and mm-hmm. there's a slightly less obvious mm-hmm. case, so it's a double trick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's a little too obvious. I'm not going to guess that, but it actually is.
Yeah, like it's like one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, and like it can't be that, and it is that, or right. something. That was a bad
okay,
example.
Okay, so let me ask you this question then. Is it cheating
to look up the word?
If you don't know it.
Yes.
It is cheating. You shouldn't be allowed to Google whatsoever.
Emma and I had a fight about that. Because she's so good at it. And she was like, you're looking at words.
She has assistance.
Cannot look at the words. Nope. Damn. Okay. If I don't know it, I don't know it.
Sometimes I Google the words.
I will never do that. Mark my words. I will never betray you, viewers. I will never look up a word on Connections. That's a real hard one for my better half struggles with. For English second language people.
Sure. And then additionally, you probably lack some of the cultural context.
Right.
Of
it, and they
right?
use, sometimes it uses, like sub words in the word, like mm-hmm. part of the word is a body part or
something. It's a color minus a letter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's never, sometimes I always think it's going to be like these words have a silent K or something in them, and it's never that.
Yeah. I've been playing a lot of chess.com lately, actually.
Oh, me and my brother used to play that a decent amount. He's better than me at chess by far. I'm not particularly good at chess.
No, I'm not either. I'm getting a little better from playing it. It's fun just because you realize what a global game it is, because it shows you the little flag of the nationality of the person
that
you're
playing.
And
you know what it is every time.
Right, of course, right? Yeah, I had one guy. I was playing a guy from South Africa. He called me an ugly Yank in the little chat, right? I told him, yeah, we'll try to stop this white genocide happening on the board.
You were the one who solved my, one of my Dungeons & Dragons episodes we did. I had a chess puzzle that I stole from online. I think it was you who solved it.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always do poorly at
I just kind of assumed that someone was going to be good at chess in a group mm-hmm. of libertarians at Reason Magazine playing Dungeons & Dragons, and everyone just looked at the puzzle blankly, and I was like, oh, shit.
No, we'll see. It's like...
Yeah, you don't do great at the puzzles.
No, but it's because if it was just me by myself and I had a chance to just, like, sit with the puzzle and think about it, I think I would do well. But in our chaotic Dungeons & Dragons environments where half the people are drunk and everyone's yelling, it's tough. It can be tough, you know? I shouldn't be leading troops into combat or,
leading orcs into travel.
Yeah. Yeah. Which they're known to do. Yeah, that's a fine stereotype to have because the pressure gets to me. But if I can be discerning and strategic, then I feel like I do okay. Mm. So,
all right. Well, that does it for this week, I think.
Okay.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. See you next week, and thanks for watching. We're on a podcast now. Natalie was working really hard to
Yes, we either
do
are
this.
Or will be soon up on Apple and maybe Spotify. And there is, if you go to reason.com, we have a page of all the episodes as well. So if you want to go back and look at the canon, you're welcome to.
And keep clamoring for those lost episodes.
Yes.
Create a pressure campaign to eventually release them. That's the really good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
all right.
Until then.
Until then. Bye-bye.